Good morning. I'd like to bring the House Committee on Business and Labor to order Wednesday, February 17th. We have two bills scheduled for public hearing and possible work session. It appears that we're probably going to carry over Senate Bill 1534 till Friday at 8 a.m. And with that, I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1544.
Mr. Chair and committee members, this measure increases the maximum number of weeks from 5 to 10 weeks for which an unemployed individual participating in an apprenticeship program is eligible for unemployment insurance benefits. Declares an emergency. There are no amendments. There's a minimal fiscal impact. There's a minimal revenue impact. And it came to you from the Senate on a vote of 28-0.
Thank you. So the sign-up sheet has Kate Newell, Gordon Harvey, Brian Parsons, and Sabrina Riggs. I'm getting kind of used to having four people come up at a time. I'm going to request a longer desk for the... Probably won't go anywhere, but... Apologize for making you crowd in, but I thought you should all come up together.
Cozy group.
Since you're all for this measure, can you introduce yourself for the record, please?
Yes. Chair Holvey, members of the committee. My name is Kate Newhall, and I'm here today representing the Sheet Metal Contractors Association and SMART Local 16, the sheet metal workers. I'm here today to testify in support of Senate Bill 1544. As you heard, this is a bill that came out of the Senate on a unanimous vote, something that we're all excited to be here today to talk to you about. This is an issue that is a relatively small change in unemployment insurance law, but it's a big difference for our apprentices. So what this bill does is for apprentices who do consolidated training, a lot of times we have, when you think of apprenticeship, you think of them doing their training in nights and evening classes. For the sheet metal apprentices, they actually do what's called consolidated training, and they come off the job for chunks of time to do their training. One of the reasons the sheet metal workers have chosen to do consolidated training is because we have two regional centers, one in Springfield and one in Portland, and they train workers from across the state. So it's actually easier for the apprentices to come to those regional centers and do their training in blocks of time. So when the apprentices come off the job for their training, there's a current statute right now that allows them to 5 weeks of unemployment insurance benefit. The sheet metal apprentices, though, actually do 6 weeks of related training, which means for the individual apprentices, when they're off the job, they actually have 2 full weeks where they're not receiving any wages or unemployment insurance benefit because, like everybody else, they have the first waiting week that they're subject to. So what we're trying to do in this bill is change the current limitation of 5 weeks of allowable unemployment insurance to 10 weeks. And you might ask the question of why are we going to 10 weeks? When we first talked about this problem with the sheet metal workers, we also talked to several of the other programs out there that do consolidated training. And we identified a second issue, which is that apprenticeship programs are somewhat limited in their ability to change their program training dates from year to year because unemployment insurance benefits are based on the benefit year, which starts the very, very first day that an individual files an unemployment insurance claim, and then it goes for the next 12-month period after that. So if, for example, a program wanted to start its training February 1st, 2016 of this year, and then next year, for whatever reason, instructor schedules, holiday schedules, they decided that they wanted to start their training January 1st of 2017. In that scenario, you'd actually have apprentices with 2 full years of training that fall technically in the same benefit year. So the programs are pretty well aware of this, and they know that they can't ever go backwards in time if they're going to shift their training dates and only go forwards in time. But it would be a nice flexibility for each of these programs to be able to move their training dates a little bit more from year to year. And I think that change doesn't have the net impact of apprentices actually claiming more insurance. It just allows the programs to shift the dates back and forth. So I think in a nutshell, that is Senate Bill 1544. With that, I'll turn it over and answer questions afterwards.
Good morning, Chair Holvey. I'm members of the House Business and Labor Committee. My name is Gordon Harvey. I'm a 30-year member of SMART Local 16, and I currently sit on the Local 16 Joint Apprenticeship Training Committee and the JTC Trust. which oversees the local 16 sheet metal apprenticeship training. I'm currently the detailing and fabrication manager for TCM Corporation. You might better know us as Temp Control Mechanical. We're a 63-year local mechanical contractor in the area. I've been there for 11 years. We currently have over 350 employees. 153 of those are sheet metal workers. And of that 153, we have 24 apprentices. We're also a member of the Sheet Metal Contractors Association that Kate mentioned, SMACNA. I'm here to testify on behalf of both TCM and SMACNA in support of this bill. As we've been working on this with our labor partners for some time to try to figure creative ways to overcome this within the apprenticeship as well. So I appreciate Chair Hovey's support, sponsorship of the bill, along with others on the committee. As an active member of the JATC, what I really take seriously is my responsibility to attract and retain the most qualified apprenticeship applicants. And that can become challenging when you have issues like this. The apprentices go through a boot camp where they're very well oriented and they are enlightened to the expectations of what the apprenticeship entails. So they get a good foundation of what the requirements are for them before they start. This issue, though, kind of presents itself in a different manner because of the benefit claim year that Kate mentioned. So we have no ability to really know when those claim years start for an apprentice. As a manager within the TCM organization, I also take really seriously the contractor's obligation to provide good on-the-job training to the apprentices and to hold them accountable for what they do on the job and in school. It's my sincere belief that the proposed amendments will have an unequivocal positive impact on the industry and on the community by creating a more engaged and qualified workforce that can more fully participate in our local community's economy. Thank you for your time.
Good morning, Representative Holby and the chair, board. Kind of want to just give you a little insight. I've personally experienced this problem that we have currently. And my name is Brian Parsons. I'm also a temp control. I've been with this company for almost 8 years now. I'm a fifth year apprentice now. So I've experienced the issues that this can cause. Basically, it's a commitment to be in here. Is as an apprentice, it's not just a job, it's a career, and we treat it that way. And so it's very tough when kind of just the way the rules are written, my bills may not go away, but when by the time Monday morning we show up and we have to pay for our school because we're accredited through a local college, and after that comes out of what our benefit would be for the week, it's about pretty much $200 to carry us over until we go back to work. And so that can be tough. I kind of consider myself lucky. I don't have children yet, but I know there's many members as apprentices that have children, homes, all sorts of other bills, just like anyone else. So it can be a financial hardship, and it's just tough because you got to stick through it. It is a commitment, but the benefits are there. So I feel like it's probably not... It's in the best interest of everyone if we could get an easier way to continue through the program, because what happens is, like they explain, I've started benefit years before, and our apprenticeship program is very much dictated by the workload of the state. So they may not even have much influence over how many classes they get to schedule and when they may be. And I've had the experience of having one apprenticeship school year run right into another in one claim year. So I've had a waiting week and sometimes 2 weeks unpaid in a school year. So, that's a very big impact when you're getting probably a less than a quarter of what your wages would have been for that week. And I'm not used to speaking in front of people.
Hey, you're doing great.
You're doing a good job.
You're doing fine.
Of course, I froze up.
I think you made your point, actually. I think you could end it right there, and I think everybody understands the situation you're in. So
thank you.
Let me help you finish there.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, you got a question down there.
You're going to let the whole panel finish. That's fine.
Yeah, I was going to let the whole panel finish.
I'll allow you to do that, Mr. Chair.
That's great. That's great of you. I really am.
Hypothetically. Good thing you're in the majority.
All right, Chair Holvey, members of the committee, my name is Sabrina Riggs. I'm here on behalf of the Iron Workers 29. We also support this bill. We're one of the groups that Kate talked about. We've got 5 weeks of consolidated classroom time. A few years ago, we ran into an instance where, you know, it was scheduled earlier in the calendar year than it had been the previous year, and so all the apprentices were unable to collect any sort of unemployment or their regular wage after about 2 weeks into the apprenticeship consolidated classroom time. So this bill wouldn't have a huge impact on a great many people, but the impact it has on the few people would be great. It's about 130 iron worker apprentices that this would make a huge difference to. We support this bill, and we urge your aye vote. Thanks.
Thank you. Now questions. Oh, you don't have one now?
I just to make a comment. My brother is a sheet metal worker for Local 55 for Apollo out in Tri-Cities, and he went through the full apprenticeship program he finished in 2012. I went to his graduation, and he was talking to me about this problem back then. He was just saying, and he does have a family. He has, you know, a mortgage. He has two kids, and it made it very difficult. While he saw the great value and was very proud to be a card-carrying member of his union and to earn that through his apprenticeship program, it was really tough to do that, and particularly out there where he could have gone and worked for other places, non-union shops, and, you know, kind of he had a lot of skills that he learned and have gotten his paycheck, but he chose to continue with that apprenticeship program despite the fact that for much of that time he wouldn't get paid at all, and if he did, it was often a limited amount. So thank you for bringing this forward. I'm very supportive.
Representative Barreto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I guess one of the things I am not familiar with the union. Maybe you could help me, Chair, hopefully. But if you're in an apprenticeship program, why wouldn't the unions pay for that rather than going through an unemployment process where they would need to pay for the unemployment insurance and that would be based on the risk? My son-in-law is an apprentice lineman down in California, and you know when he signed on, you know, the first year they're a grunt, and then for the next 4 years they're apprentices while they're learning the trade, and then they go into the journeyman status. But whether he's in school or on training on the job out in the field, you know, they're basically paying him a wage. And so how does that differ in this arena?
Chair Holvey, Representative Barreto, I would, before answering that, point out that union apprenticeship programs and their partner contractors are investing, and on the case of the sheet metal contractors and Smart Local 16, about $1 million a year in training their workforce. So I think that's a significant investment that this industry is making to workforce development and training. And I recognize also that employers pay for unemployment insurance through their unemployment insurance rates. And I also think the employment department is here and on hand, but I think this is a very negligible impact and cost. I think they've said it's going to cost about $40,000 a year to the unemployment insurance trust fund, but it's also going to be a huge difference in the lives of the individual apprentices.
Sure. No, I understand all that. I was just trying to get a grasp on someone has to pay for it, and typically you pay for it, an employer pays for it through the premiums on his unemployment insurance, and so seems to be just transferring from one to the other, and I'm just wondering why it isn't just simplified and just taken care of by the employer.
Well, Representative Barreto, one of the challenges is the budget. I mean, the budget is, you know, watched very closely at the apprenticeship level. We don't have a lot of extra funds. So we really watch the instructor's time, try to schedule things around the courses and the need that the industry has. Almost 100% of the apprenticeship is funded through employer contributions to the training center directly. Then on the contractor side, there's investment from the on-the-job training aspect. In Brian's case, you have a journeyman who takes time to actually instruct him throughout the day in things that he needs, which is a financial impact to the productivity of the organization as well. The apprentice has some skin in the game with the fact that they have to take that time off work and participate in the courses. So there is some shared sacrifice there. I would say that from the apprenticeship standpoint, and I don't know this as deeply as I probably should, but there would be really no way to budget for some of that because some of it's unknown. A lot of it has to do with the claim start date, and some of it has to do with the course scheduling. So when those two things overlap and intermingle, that's where the challenges come in. If you were able to have a six-week schedule that always fit with the unemployment benefits of each apprentice, then you'd be able to kind of evaluate the cost of some of that. And right now, I don't think that you could.
Okay.
The comment, maybe I will a little bit later. Representative Kinnemer was next.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. First, maybe more a general comment. I've been familiar with this issue for almost 30 years now. And I guess to Representative Barreto, I would say there is a different relationship between the union and their employers for sheet metal workers. They have a long tradition of negotiating and coming to mutual agreements. You know, it's sort of interesting, but this came over from the Senate unanimous. That's, to an outsider, that's a shock if you're not careful. But it's been the product of working together for many years. And this is one of those unusual ones. In some level, it penalizes the worker and challenges the system, although it's a small impact. But I think it's become a mutually agreed one. And historically, most of us have found that quite reasonable and sustainable. And if it works, you know, maybe the real test is, does it work for everybody? And at this point, I don't know of anybody that's unhappy with it, that's involved with it. So that's the reason that I support it. And then I just wanted to add, my 84-year-old neighbor is a former sheet metal worker, and I think he should be probably given the title of ambassador. He speaks to me at every instance whenever he catches me and talks about the sheet metal union and how good it is and that how much he enjoys his pension. So,
I assume a defined benefit pension as well. Representative Doherty.
Sure. Yeah, and I would just like to echo what Representative Kinnemer said, because it's not only just with the sheet metal workers, but the electrical workers, plumbers, steam fitters, all of the unions put in hundreds, millions and millions of dollars in their training centers. And if you've never gone to their training centers, you should, because they are, you go to the plumbers and steam, it's state of the art. And they work in tandem with the employers because they know that they're going to produce an extremely good product, and that the there's going to be continual training throughout all of their career. And so it's something that really works. And, you know, kind of contrary to popular belief, it's just, you know, unions aren't rolling in money and the employers aren't rolling in money. And so this is where they work together to try to get a quality product. And so, you know, that's the one thing I think is so important, because it's not only sheet metal, but it's a lot of the other trades that they work together. And this is one thing that they're working together, seeing where a problem is and saying, can we have a solution? And obviously the fiscal's not huge and so on. So I think it's, again, another example of where labor and management can work together.
Representative Widener. Well, I appreciate all the conversation. I think I might add that it is not just union apprenticeship programs that can avail themselves of this. Apprenticeship programs are also in the non-union construction industry as well. So I just wanted to make that clear as well. And, you know, I agree all the trades have, you know, some really great programs. I'm partial to the carpenters. Hope nobody throws anything at me. You know, they do a great job of training. And, in fact, they do, as mentioned, there's a certain amount of money that comes out of the paycheck along with the payroll tax that the employer sends into generally a apprenticeship trust to run these programs, where they provide all of the materials, the instructors, and they put an incredible amount of money, time, and effort into this. And for the apprentices, it's no fault of their own that they're not able to collect a paycheck while they're going to training. In the construction industry, their projects are bid under contract, and they don't have the ability to add on a couple extra weeks here and there to that contract for the training aspect of it. And so this has been a long-standing policy to encourage apprentices to participate in the training, the school training and a portion of their apprenticeship, which they're required to complete along with the on-the-job training to progress into a journeyman status. So I think it's a great policy that we've had for quite some time. It's not particularly unique to Oregon, but I think Oregon's done a really good job. And and we do have the employment department here. I did have one question that I wanted to broach, and I'm sure that it's not in this bill. I don't entirely, but I always kind of wondered about this, because some programs I know, when apprentices are faced with perhaps a choice of whether they, and some programs do have choices for them to either complete their training now or defer it to a later date, depending on their, how their bills are doing at the present time. Can I afford, to take the week or 2 weeks without pay to do my training? And so that's always bothered me a little bit for the purposes of training, that they still have to complete that waiting week. And I've always wondered if that was a federal compliance issue, and I'll probably ask the employment department that question of why they're required to do the waiting week as well, when it's for the purposes of training and it's still good for the industry and everything for that apprentice to get training, and yet they suffer without getting the full paycheck. Unemployment is not a full paycheck, so I don't know if you want to comment to that or not.
Chair Holby, I think I would defer that to the employment department, but what I will say that in this bill we weren't trying to change how the waiting week applies. And we weren't trying to take that on. The waiting week applies to everybody.
I think as far as the creative solutions, the JATC takes those on monthly. I mean, everything's on the table is how to make it more effective for the apprentice. One of the challenges, we never are sitting there wondering how to fill vacant time. There are multiple new technologies that are in the market, or the HVAC market, and we don't have the time to even teach some of this stuff to the apprentices. So our challenge is, how do we add more curriculum to the apprentices' five-year program, not impact their amount of hours they have to do it, and then the unemployment is just a piece of that. So we take on any ideas for creative ways to overcome a lot of this stuff every month.
I don't know how creative it is or whether it's even doable, but maybe next session we can talk about that, or maybe not. I don't know. Maybe there's some compliance issues with the USDOL on that particular issue. And, it's been a long time since I've, been active. I spent 10 years on a JATC overseeing an apprenticeship program in my trade, and found it to be really a very valuable piece of the construction industry. So any other questions, comments? Not seeing any.
Thank
you so much for bringing the bill forward. And David, just out of curiosity, would you mind coming up and answering the question about the waiting week?
Certainly. Thank you, Chair Hovey, members of the committee. For the record, David Gerstenfeld, Division Director for the Unemployment Insurance Program at the Employment Department, and I have with me Jason Barbie, who oversees our unemployment insurance policy and is the most familiar with this bill. For the conformity issue about the waiting week, I do not believe that there is a conformity issue with federal requirements. States are not required to have a waiting week, but the vast majority of them do. So I believe that is a policy option for states to look at.
So there could be an exception for the purposes of training that we would not have to have apprentices serve that waiting week for the during their training.
Right. And I hesitate,
essentially, if we change that policy.
And I hesitate to speak definitively on the part of the U.S. Department of Labor, but I believe that that's a possibility.
Thank you. I guess you have nothing to add to that.
I do. That's
all right.
Pretty thorough.
Then I guess you don't have to introduce yourself. Any other questions for the Employment Department? Not seeing any. Thank you so much for being here. Apologize that we won't be getting to the other bill that you're here for. Maybe Friday.
We'll see you Friday.
8 a.m.
Thank you.
With that, is there anyone else that wanted to testify on Senate Bill 1544? Not seeing any. I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1544 and open a works. 1544. And we will open a work session on Senate Bill 1544.
Good bill should pass.
Mr. Vice Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move Senate Bill 1544 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Kinnemer moves Senate Bill 1544 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill, to my knowledge, had no opposition. This bill is kind of a no harm, no foul. I think it's a cooperative agreement between management and labor and the contractors and the apprenticeship program. I can't see this but other than a win-win. And as long as we have, and I think Mike Schaffer summed it up one time, because we have such an emphasis on a college education, and Mike Schaffer said, you know, you can have all the engineers in the world you want, but who's going to build the bridge? And I think that sums this up, and I'm very pleased to see this.
So am I. So the question is, do we want Carrier on the floor, or should it be on the consent calendar?
Well, can I add one thing to Representative Esquivel's comment?
Consent. Mm-hmm.
Not only that, I'd like to see an engineer go through and make the thing that goes like this when you get your furnace, a new furnace.
The thing?
And to watch, well, I'm sure there is a technical name for it.
And you were picking on me for helping verbs on my floor.
But to see people go through and pound out, and to make sure that the coupling or the joint that goes onto your furnace, it was fascinating.
It is fascinating.
And and it not only makes sure that these guys are very good in geometry too. So.
Representative Weidman, do you have a comment now?
I was just had picked up. Representative Doherty picking on me for my use of a helping verb yesterday when I was on my remonstrance.
Oh, this is a retaliation piece, I see.
Thing. The thing.
Okay, any other comments? Does anybody want to carry this on the floor?
Is there any objection to that?
I will.
First of all.
Yeah.
No.
Oh.
Yeah,
that. Okay.
If you don't want it on the consent.
We'll have a roll call vote.
Yeah.
Up to it.
Representative Beretta.
Aye.
Representative Doherty?
Aye.
Representative Esquivel?
Aye.
Representative Evans?
Yes.
Representative Pagan?
Yes.
Representative
Hurd?
Aye.
Representative Notes?
Aye.
Representative Weiner?
Aye.
Vice Chair Buckley?
Excused.
Vice Chair
Kinnemer? Aye. Senate Bill 1544, I haven't received the votes, passed. Representative Doherty, would you like to carry the bill?
Sure.
Can we ask questions to the carrier?
Absolutely. I will get the proper
at the appropriate time.
The proper
with
terminology.
That's dangerous.
Just a comment. You made an earlier reference about the unions, and I was trying to remember. When I think you were explaining to me that the Carpenters Union is the best union in Oregon.
Here we go.
Yeah, let's start a fight.
Now, I have never said that. I would not.
There is fighting words.
I would not count that kind of comment.
Wow. I thought they chewed on sawdust all day.
I am really impressed by the electricians.
No plumbers or steam
iron workers, you know, who else is in the room?
Iron
to be
workers.
Safe, the plumbers. You know.
Iron workers.
So anyway,
bury him like this.
I think we'll go ahead and close this work session. We'll close the work session on Senate Bill 1544. And we will carry over Senate Bill 1534 to Friday, 8 a.m.
We got cockeye.
Any other comments? Business?
Nope.
Isn't this bad all adjourned the House Committee on Business and Labor?
Nope.
Isn't this bad all adjourned the House Committee on Business and Labor?
Nope.